Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and for most people, the term net neutrality is something that sounds technical and remote and makes your eyes cross. But for some, it suggests that the quality of news, entertainment, and even democracy in our lives, not to mention how we pay for digital content, hangs in the balance of a corporate power struggle now taking place in Washington. Tuesday was a black day for net neutrality. In fact, John Herman's article on BuzzFeed about what happened at the Federal Communications Commission, or what happened to them in federal court, is called Welcome to the Net Neutrality Nightmare Scenario. He's here now to explain why advocates of an open internet are now freaking out while Verizon and your local cable monopoly are cheering. Hi, John. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
Would it be accurate to say that basically internet service providers have won the right to set up an online fast lane and make deals with big companies for preferential treatment of their content?
If they're able to maintain the new status quo, then I think that is accurate. There are obviously going to be a lot of struggles coming up over the next few months and possibly a few years, but now they're in a defensive position, which is advantageous for them.
And your article is headlined, as I said, Welcome to the Net Neutrality Nightmare Scenario. What is the net neutrality nightmare scenario, and who uses that phrase?
Well, net neutrality advocates have had trouble for years trying to communicate the importance of net neutrality to voters and to activists. So they've devised what I've come to call a series of nightmare scenarios. The old nightmare scenario, which you would see which is part of the conversation in the mid-2000s leading into the 2008 election, was that your internet service provider, absent net neutrality, would be able to charge you, say, $5 or $10 extra dollars for access to video sites, and then another $5 for access to social networks. This was scary. Probably wasn't terribly realistic. I think internet service providers, even if you assume they're extremely cynical, know better than to take things away from their customers. The next scenario, a more realistic one and one that we've seen some internet service providers experiment with, is that they'll charge companies such as Netflix or Google for better service for the internet service provider's customers. So Google would be required under this scenario to pay, say, a Comcast or a Verizon a fee every month to ensure that YouTube works, or Netflix would need to pay this to ensure that the videos stream in high definition.
These huge users of broadband, like Netflix and Amazon and YouTube, right?
Yes, they would be first in line in this scenario. But we've arrived at a new and I think more insidious scenario, in which AT&T articulated usefully during the Consumer Electronics Show this year, which is something they're calling sponsored data. And rather than a Comcast or a Verizon levying fees against large content providers, they're offering content providers the option to pay for users' data. So let's say you're AT&T. Your customers have a certain amount of mobile data that they buy every month. Maybe it's 2 gigabytes or 5 gigabytes. A company like Netflix, under this arrangement, would be able to pay for that data so that it doesn't count against these users' plans. This artificial scarcity created by AT&T is now being used by AT&T to basically enact the old net neutrality nightmare scenario, but to disguise it to customers as a sort of gift.
Well, along those lines, this is sometimes portrayed as merely a battle between companies that really doesn't affect democracy or the quality of information in our lives. It's really Netflix that has the most to gain from net neutrality because they take up so much bandwidth every day while being charged no more by AT&T than any little website that puts out a little politics blog. And so this is about, we're all subsidizing Netflix movie streaming while they're getting over on us and our internet service providers. On the other hand, those most alarmed think if companies can buy preferential treatment on the web in the way you just described, then we'll also see things like Fox News and other rich corporate information companies winning. The Nation magazine and nonprofit news services, I could think of a few dear to my heart, lose because corporate news can afford to buy their way to this internet fast lane. The little guys can't. So public access to journalism gets warped. Therefore, democracy gets warped. Are we headed that way?
That is certainly still a concern. But as this issue has become more complicated and as these large corporations approach to either fighting for or fighting against net neutrality has become more nuanced, that fear has sort of been pushed down the road. The more immediate fear, I think the one that most people will relate to, is that let's say you're Facebook or you're Google now, and you have entered into an arrangement with the companies that provide people with their internet access. What happens to the next Facebook or the next YouTube? They don't have the money or the resources at their disposal to pay these fees, to make these deals. And so they might not be able to attract investment. They might not be able to continue operations. This eventually does reach all levels of the internet. This would have ramifications for smaller, less funded news operations, for example. It would make it would make distributing, say, public radio over the internet a much more complicated proposition.
So, listeners, while you can still get to our website at the same speed that you can get to a giant corporate site, why don't you go to our page and start the conversation about net neutrality, or continue the one that's starting there at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Post your net neutrality nightmare scenario. Maybe you are waking up from a net neutrality nightmare this morning, only to discover it's very real. Or if you're on the other side and you're waking up from a net neutrality bliss dream and you think we're all going to be better off if the government doesn't regulate how the internet service providers charge, same deal. Go post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show at the same speed as every other site while you still can. Before you go, and my guest is John Herman, BuzzFeed tech reporter. One complicating factor is that President Obama's current FCC chairman seems not as committed to net neutrality as the last one. So is it even clear that the government is going to appeal this federal court ruling?
I do think that the FCC will try to appeal this ruling or to take action to enforce some sort of net neutrality. But, this chairman's dedication to the cause doesn't seem as strong as the last chairman's dedication to the cause. The last chairman's lack of dedication to the cause was what got us in this situation in the first place. It was the FCC's unwillingness to attempt to recategorize internet service providers as telecommunications providers that allowed for this to happen in the first place. 2010's rules were sort of a compromise. The court ruling decided that the FCC, in the way, according to the way those rules were written, didn't have the authority to regulate information services as telecommunication services.
When you say that, in other words, as public utilities, right, as the old phone company, for example. So it could be regulated as a telecommunications company in that sense. If they're just seen as any other player in the marketplace rather than a sort of public good, a public function like the old telephone wires, then it's harder to regulate them with specific rules.
Exactly. And in 2010, these rules, I mean, it was essentially what the 2010 rules did was attempt to regulate these information providers as telecommunications companies, as basically old phone companies. And according to the FCC's own classifications, they didn't really have the right to do that. So we're sort of set back about 10 or 12 years now. We're in a situation where the FCC is going to have to recategorize or attempt to recategorize these internet service providers, something which they do have the authority to do, but which will meet a much more political opposition than even the 2010 rules, which, many people have forgotten. House Republicans fought against to the point that they tried to defund the FCC in response to these rules. So that was a hard political fight that a lot of people have forgotten. The next one will be much harder.
John Herman, BuzzFeed Tech reporter. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.